and welcome to a new edition of the Pelican Debrief podcast. Sorry about the delay if you are a longtime listener. Today we have a Pelican Debrief veteran, Charles LaRocca, and you can catch his writing every week at pelicandebrief.com, along with, you know, all of the usual game coverage, analysis, and podcasts. Hoping to do that a little bit more. So Charles is on top of everything over there. He's on games every week. He's on his own analysis piece where he highlights a specific Pelicans player every week. He'll plug himself toward the end of the show, but we'd love to hear what you guys think, any questions you might have, and any interests you might have for future episodes. Again, thanks for listening, and here is Charles. Okay, so we're just going to go ahead and start with the Pelicans' most important player of the 2016 season. This one's actually pretty interesting because obviously it's Anthony Davis, so we're going to go ahead and say besides him, because he would clearly win just about everybody's list on that one. But go ahead and tell us who you have there.
Yeah, you said, like, when it comes to the most important, like, any list probably starts and ends with Anthony Davis, but I choose Buddy Hield as the most important just due to long-term success for the franchise. His development is probably, like, the most important thing to take away from this season because, I mean, say the Pelicans do go on, like, a massive run and squeak in the playoffs, it won't really matter too much. I mean, it'd probably just be a first-round exit, or it looks like the Pelicans are likely headed to the lottery, so Buddy Hield's development throughout the season is the most important. He hasn't really played very well, so I guess I could go with, like, you may want to say Dante Cunningham's, like, surprised me. Like, I thought he was finished, and I thought he wasn't going to be a valuable rotation piece, but he's kind of reinvented himself as, like, some three-point specialist. He's shooting, like, 40%, but then he got hurt. So, to me, he was the most surprising, but I think going forward, Buddy Hield is definitely the most valuable. And he's probably the most important when it comes to long-term success for the Pelicans franchise.
Yeah, Dante Cunningham's interesting. I mean, it's not really a surprise at this point when those kind of players go down for the Pelicans, unfortunately. But he definitely was important to what they were doing early on in the season, even though, you know, maybe it does go to show exactly how far you can get if Dante Cunningham's super important to your team, considering that they started 0-8. But yeah, he sort of was what Solomon Hill was supposed to be going into the year, so that's kind of an interesting thing. And I noticed you've been saying on Twitter quite a bit, or talking about quite a bit, and I've been wondering a lot of the same thing, who's going to get the short end of the stick once everyone starts to get healthy. Cunningham, obviously, has already played this year and kind of fit his way into the rotation, but we saw Tyreke Evans come back yesterday. But, I think you're definitely right there that there's something to how exactly the importance of each player is going to play into whether they're playing or not in about a month.
Yeah, I think, and at least seeing with Alvin Gentry, like, he's willing to change rotations up on the fly, so it might change game to game, and I think that's something that should be looked at, too. It would be interesting.
Well, he kind of said as much early in this, you know, before all the injuries struck. It seemed like that was his plan. And, I mean, there's worse problems to have than too many players who you can put on the court. But I don't know if I trust him to make the right call a lot of the time.
And there's too many players putting on the court, and I'm not sure that these guys are, like, even the best options. It's just, like, they're all, like, kind of average, you know. They're not really – they're not really standout players. They're all average role players who could have a night on any given game. But, exactly. I'm not sure Alvin Gentry, if that's a process you can trust night in and night out to find the right guy, the hot hand.
Yeah, it's just a lot of responsibility. I mean, the best coaches can probably make that call, and I think, you know, you see that with a lot of – it's definitely the thing in the NBA right now, definitely a trend that's emerging from the best teams, Spurs, Warriors, Cavs. Being able to reach down into their bench. Even the Clippers have part of their being so good this year has been their ability to play those guys deeper on the bench. But it's a hard thing to do, and to keep all the guys happy that you need to keep happy. And it starts to be too many things to juggle, I think, at a certain point. But, I mean, so I'll say my most important player, and then I'd like to hear your thoughts on how Buddy did last night. We're recording this before the Rockets game, so the last night's game was the Pacers game. I mean, my most important player, I think, has been Langston Galloway. There's been too many games now, especially ones without Drew Holiday, where Galloway has somehow been the second option on offense, and that's sort of the first answer for why the Pelicans have been losing so many games, and especially so many close games. A lot of that stuff's going to come down to who's carrying your offense, and you touched on that a lot on the player grades last night on Anthony Davis's section. Is, you know, if it's your focal point on offense, that guy's got to be able to score when things get tighter in crunch time, when defenses are keying in on them and whatever. And somehow Langston Galloway, I mean, I don't really know if it's skill necessarily. I think a lot of it's been luck, but at a certain point you have to wonder when that when you have to give him the benefit of the doubt and start saying making difficult shots is just a skill a guy has rather than a lucky break over a couple weeks. And Galloway's been proving that. I mean, he wasn't so great last night, but obviously even, you know, hot shooters are going to have a cold night. But it's been about a month now, a little less than a month, of him pretty consistently, you know, helping the offense with his shooting. So he's got to be, like, you know, besides, I mean, and even saying Holiday is a little bit of a cop-out because probably he'd be second if he hadn't missed so much time. But Galloway's definitely up there as far as, like, unexpected importance, you know.
It kind of speaks to how desperate the Pelicans are when you're having to rely on Langston Galloway for your shooting.
Yeah. But what did you think of what we saw from Buddy? I mean, a lot of it was shooting, and of course he's going to look great when those shots are falling. Sometimes it's just as simple as that. But I thought I saw a lot of stuff from him that was not as, I don't know, not as simple as just, you know, making shots last night. What'd you see?
What I saw, I think obviously playing with Anthony Davis and Drew Holiday has been, like, huge for him, because he sets, like, a little rub screen and then rolls. They do a play where Anthony Davis comes up as he's going to, like, a fake pick and roll with Holiday, and then Buddy sprints to the corner. And they did that a couple times to find open threes, and I thought that was a really, really nice setup of a play. And just the way he's being used in the starting lineup, I think I will give the coaching staff credit for that, because they stuck with Buddy, and now you kind of got the feeling before even last night against the Pacers that he was on the cusp of, like, a breakout game. I've been really impressed with how they've been getting him on curls to the rim, and he does a little pull-up from mid-range. It's just the way he's been getting used more recently that's been impressive to me.
Yeah, they do those little mid-range curls for Galloway and Hield. And I mean, I'd be interested to see. I mean, that kind of stuff is going to be what Gentry tries to do once everybody's healthy. That's what he's made a living doing in the past few years as an assistant, is, you know, motion and cutting and screening from all five positions. And I think that's a lot of why you maybe see Omer Oshik not playing as much recently, because maybe not even so much, you know, the problems that so many fans have with him, where, you know, he's not as athletic and fast as you might like from a team playing a little quicker. And his hands, obviously, that's a problem still. It shouldn't be this late in his career, et cetera, et cetera. But I think a lot of it maybe comes down to Ajinsa can at least provide some semblance of, you know, what a Alvin Gentry center can do. Yeah. You know, a lot of that passing and shooting stuff that becomes more valuable when it's a bigger guy doing it, and Ajinsa can at least for 20 minutes a game provide a little of that. And he did it last night. He made a couple jumpers, and he's had some good moments. I mean, that's the story of his career at this point. But
he was really good against the Warriors the other night too. He had very nice blocks, protected the rim well. And Ajinsa, in 20 minutes, he will show you flashiness. You're going to see some goofy plays from him, but you will see some goofy plays from Mesic as well. So I think I agree with you on that. Ajinka being in the starting lineup isn't something – I don't think you would agree to. It's not a long-term answer.
No, I don't think so.
You have to guard Ajinka on offense. You have to at least respect him, because he has a nice touch. He can hit a mid-range. He has competent enough hands. He's athletic enough. So I agree with you. In 20 minutes, he fits what the Pelicans are trying to do better than Mesic. And you've seen it with the offensive improvement the last two games. I think recently, the last two games, the offense has looked more of like Alvin Gentry's vision of what we thought would happen when Alvin Gentry was hired. It's been more of ball movement, more pace, and you hadn't seen that really in a consistent basis since he's been here. And the last two games, I think, were the best representation of his vision.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's just I've always said, I mean, even last year when you were talking about guys like James Ennis and I don't even know, a whole assortment of dudes that shouldn't have been playing as many minutes as they had to. It's always been about the best scorers can do this on their own, but the best systems can do it for the players that are in it, which is getting to their spots. I mean, that's the oldest thing in basketball is, you know, Michael Jordan, can he get to his spot? Whatever. Whoever it is, those guys are always, they know where they're best, and then they can get their shot off from that spot. But a system like Gentry's is all about getting those guys in their spot and having an open shot from it. And when things are rolling like they were last night, you see Buddy open in the corner. You see even a Jensen on a pick and pop from mid range. You see Drew Holiday rolling to the rim a lot more and making plays from the paint rather than having to pull up with a, you know, less spaced out offense. So when the team's been healthy, it's looked good a lot of the time that Gentry's been here. But I mean, I think eventually we'll probably see something change with either the roster or the coaching, and I hope it doesn't come down to the fact that the team wasn't healthy enough for him. But you're right. I mean, I guess going through that mindset, it would be, who do you think again, we're going to have to go non-Anthony Davis here because he's definitely the answer, but best offensive player outside of Davis, who do you have?
I mean, it's a limited sample size, and obviously he was hurt in the beginning of the year, but I have to say Drew Holiday anyway, because he's the only guy I could probably say you could rely on night in and night out, and not even, because he's not a perfect offensive player. Drew Holiday, he still relies too much on jump shots, I feel, but he runs the offense the most efficiently. He's one of those guys that does get to his spots. He passes with decisiveness. And when it comes down to it, like I said, he's the only one I could really rely on night in and night out. And I think he's the only one that would probably be a starter on any other team.
Yeah, that's probably true. That's a good way to look at it. I have Holiday too. I don't really think there's another answer for this one. It's just a patience thing with him. You know what I mean? It's weird to see a player who is so good simply because they don't rush anything. I mean, there's some players who could get in a lot of trouble by doing that, and they don't have the intelligence or the, you know, skill to do what they need to do once they have their angle or their pass open or, you know, a man open. But the fact that he knows exactly when to go, whenever he needs to score, when, you know, there's a hole in the defense, splitting a double team, splitting, you know, defenders in the pick and roll, crossing a guy over. He never is too rushed about any of the decisions he makes, and it ends up being, you know, better more often than not. And so that's been so nice for a team that doesn't actually have that much chemistry. I mean, I guess that's not really surprising, but they haven't had time together. And so it's really even more impressive to see what he can do. He steps on the court, and then all of a sudden it seems like these guys have been playing together for a couple seasons already, rather than, you know, Solomon Hill and Etuan Moore and Terrence Jones and crunch time last night. Like, those guys, they have not played a ton together between Moore being injured and this only being their first year on the team. Crunch time offense last night looked, I mean, at least like they knew what they were doing, which is pretty much just a testament to Holiday orchestrating everything, communicating. And then, I mean, obviously you have a guy like Anthony Davis makes things a lot easier, but it's definitely Holiday. He's been just as good as he was last year. Maybe the point totals aren't showing that, but when you have players like Galloway and Hield kind of taking that burden off from, you know, compared to what he was working with around him last year at the end when he was scoring 20, 30 every night. It's been a lot better this year for him to work, and also the results overall.
I think that's going to be another adjustment for Holiday, as he's the best guard on the team, best perimeter player on the team offensively. And I think he's going to be a challenge for him some nights, because he's going to get team's best guy on it.
Yeah, for sure, especially as he starts playing more often and they can actually game plan. I feel like that's been a problem. The teams don't even know what to expect because they have no idea what the heck Gentry's going to throw out and who's going to be healthy.
I agree with that. And also, I think this might be something we disagree on. Where do you think Drew Holiday is most effective as the primary ball handler? Or do you like him next to Tim Frazier?
I mean, I like Tim Frazier a lot, but I think, I mean, it's going to be interesting. It kind of goes back to that rotation discussion, which I think everything will start to go into that discussion as the year goes on. But, I mean, I don't think he's most effective in that position, definitely. I mean, I get what Gentry's trying to do there, because especially considering he doesn't have a lot of other options, and I think he likes what he can do when he has both of those guys who can make a play once the ball's in their hands. I don't know how long I have to expect that each one more will be better in those situations before he actually does. And maybe that won't be this year. I don't know. I mean, he has a 4-year deal, and I guess we have 4 years to see, but I kind of always imagined that having him in the starting lineup next to either one of those guys was going to be sort of the same situation for Gentry, where he'd have those two guys both being able to make plays. But I definitely think if you have Frazier handling the second unit, that's the best situation, not having both of those guys together. And I mean, if they play crunch time and the offense is working, then so be it. But I don't think we've seen great things from those guys outside of a few fourth quarters here and there.
It almost feels like the Pelicans are in the problem. They have too many ball handlers, too many guys that, and especially with Tyreke Evans coming back.
Yeah, well, too many guys who should, maybe not too many guys who are great at it, you know. All right, well, let's go on to, I guess let's go to most best defender. Let's switch things over to the defensive side of the ball. I'll go first this time. I think it still has to be Solomon Hill. I mean, I guess in a lot of the same ways that Omer Asik has been such a maligned guy this past couple of years, since he's been so abysmal with his big contract being the only thing people notice. I think Solomon Hill was destined to be disappointing based on the expectations you kind of get thrown on you when you have a 4-year, $48 million contract. That kind of player making that much money, that player should be doing a whole lot on both ends, or being the best player in the league on one end. You know what I mean? There's not a lot of average or below average players making that much money, even in the, you know, financial climate that the NBA is in right now. There's still not players who can at least show up on one side of the ball every night that are making that much money. And the ones who do are pretty obvious and they stand out. And I don't think Hill has stood out negatively in the same way that a lot of those players have. I mean, we're starting to see a lot of, you know, quarter season, third season awards similar to these from across the league. And he's not getting mentioned in the same class as a guy like Evan Turner or, you know, Luol Deng, other wings who have struggled with their new teams. And I think a lot of that's because of how good he's been on defense, regardless of the poor offensive play. I mean, he can credibly guard the best wings in the league, and there's a lot of those guys you're never going to really stop because of the matchup problem that they have, and, you know, mixing up coverage on those guys is always going to be the best plan rather than just saying, all right, Solomon, go control KD for 48 minutes. Nobody can be expected to do that, but I thought he did a really good job on Paul George last night, and I mentioned that maybe, you know, that could have been as a result of playing with Paul George for the first 4 years of his career. But either way, Paul George not an easy guy to defend, regardless of how familiar you are with him. And between Drew Holiday and Solomon Hill, they were able to keep him in check quite a bit. And so, I mean, that's just another example. But it's been throughout the whole year that Hill's been able to, and maybe not the whole year, but definitely the past month or so, that Hill's been able to keep those guys in control, whether it's from the post, you know, or outside. Who do you have?
I think Solomon Hill, he's not a terrible player. He's not a horrible, terrible, useless player. It's just that, like you said, when you factor in the contract, he just hasn't lived up to it. And I think it's almost kind of unfair to him, but his defense has not really been bad at all. And I have Drew Holiday as the best defender, and that's mainly just because I've been really enamored with his way to guard positions 1-3, as you touched on. He guarded Paul George last night. I thought he did a good job on Steph Curry the other day, even though Curry dropped 30, I think. But them into tough spots, tough shots, and
yeah, Holiday. I mean, you can't use Steph Curry as an example of how good or bad a defender is.
Exactly. And I think with those guys, as long as you're forcing them into tough shots and not letting them get to their spots, you're doing a good job. And Holiday does a good job using his size on the to stop bigger small forwards from getting to the spots that they want. Like a number of times last night, Paul George tried to post him up, or you know, you've seen small forwards try to post him up, and he won't budge, and they're stuck, and they're forced to a tough fadeaway or a tough like 20-footer, and that's just been really impressive to me. And the way he's been playing the passing lanes as well. But I agree with you on Solomon Hill has not been bad defensively. He's actually been very good, and he's given what you're advertised defense. And but it just comes down to the offensive side of the ball. That's where he gets really a lot of the stigma placed on him as a bust, and likely he won't. And I don't think he will live up to his contract. But at least you know you can play him and know what you're kind of going to get.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, so Holiday's weird because, I mean, he's one of those guys, I don't know if you've taken a look at any of the numbers, but all the defensive statistics that try to show what a player is, like, you know, overall, on either side of the ball, don't favor him. Defensive box plus minus, he's been a little better by that metric than he was last year, but he's basically having a similar defensive season to what he did. What'd you say?
I remember you wrote a piece touching on that.
Yeah.
I think it was part of the season that he might be a little slightly overrated on defense.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know what it is, though, because I agree with you. Like, he looks really good, and I think clearly he helps what the Pelicans try to do. I mean, a lot of those numbers, too, are still dependent on the team defense, and we all know that that's been pretty frustrating, whatever you want to call it, for the past few years. So, I mean, that probably has a little bit to do with it, but still, I mean, somebody who looks so good should probably be doing more to help his team. And yeah, to finish what I was saying, he's basically having the same defensive season he had during their playoff year when he only played 40 games. But when he played, he's basically graded out as about the same defensively this year as he was that year. Same defensive rating, pretty much the same defensive box plus minus. But I think he still looks just as good as he did in the years where the numbers showed he was more valuable. So I don't know. It's hard. Is there anywhere where you see him getting taken advantage of on defense?
I don't know. It's interesting. Like, it's one of those things where, you know, you have the eye test versus the numbers and the metrics. And where I do see him struggle when it comes to, like, closing. I think he closes out a little too hard sometimes, and then that leads to guys blowing by him. He plays, but other than that, it's nothing really, I think, that's been glaringly obvious that while Jrue Holiday is struggling on defense, but other than maybe closing out too hard, and I know he has a tendency to get over aggressive and commit dumb fouls. Like, I saw that a couple times against the Golden State Warriors, but then again, it's Golden State, so.
Yeah.
I don't know. Watching Jrue Holiday, like, you think, wow, this guy's has one of the top defenders, and he gets that credit among the league too. Like, you hear it amongst everyone. Like, most NBA people say he's a two-way player.
And I think that, yeah. I mean, the opposing coaching staffs definitely see him that way, and the Pelicans staff definitely does. I mean, he's guarding Paul George last night. You don't throw a guy that you don't think is capable onto that matchup and let him just get taken, you know. It's definitely that they have that confidence in him too. So, I mean, it's definitely strange.
And he's only played 12 games this year, so I don't want to, like...
Yeah, exactly. Those are hard to really use, but...
He hasn't been a defensive plus in defensive box. I don't think he's been, like, a positive at all since he's been with the Pelicans.
No, his last positive... He wasn't even a positive on defense, really, according to those numbers. I mean, I don't know compared to what the Sixers were overall as far as defensive rating and whatever, but no, even in his All-Star season, defensive box plus minus, he was negative 0.4. That's sort of when his trend downward started. His second two seasons are the only two he's been positive by that number, and that was obviously really good Sixers defense for most of that time with Doug Collins and, you know, when they were still making the playoffs every year. And so, I mean, a lot of it is team-dependent, and the Pelicans are a worse team than the Sixers teams were, but I don't know. It's a weird one. I mean, I guess it's something to watch because this year, you know, it looks like he'll have most of the year pretty healthy with a better team around him and a better defensive team for sure around him. So I guess we just watch it. Who do you have for most improved? I mean, I guess it could be Holiday, but we've only seen 12 games of him, and I don't think he's improved too much. I think he's improved the team, but that might be more
like, this might be a cop-out, but I have Anthony Davis at most improved. And, you know, I had to throw Anthony Davis somewhere on the list because he has, like, legitimately improved his game. And he wasn't good at post. He was not a good post player last year on offense. And he really fixed that. He's averaging, I think, 1 point per possession in the post, and that's better than guys like LaMarcus Aldridge, Joel Embiid, Kevin. Like, you know, with post-up guys you think of as post-up players, he's doing better than them. And he's doing it. He's, like, in the 78th percentile in the post, and he's kind of finally developed a go-to move offensively that wasn't there, that we've been waiting on. Like, because he used to be – he was assisted highly on a lot of his shots. I think that still may be the case, but now you see Anthony Davis in isolation. He can do a little floater in between.
Yeah, he has that. He can rip through or cross over on the post when he turns his foot, and he can, you know, he'll go from posting to facing up really smoothly. I think that's a lot of where the improvement comes from, is being able to transition between. He's always been a great face up player, but knowing when to take advantage from each situation has been the thing that stuck out to me.
To me, and guys like in the past, guys like Thaddeus Young or Rudy Gay, you stick a guy like that on, like an athletic wing type of player, and he would struggle. He wouldn't really, that could kind of match his quickness. He wouldn't really know how to combat that. But now he's fine with shooting over them. He's fine with dropping a hook over them. He's using his length better this year, and it's just been, like, as a basketball fan, like, almost amazing to watch, like, what he's doing on a nightly basis.
Yeah, it definitely is. I mean, I never wanted to say it. Like, obviously, I haven't been a Pelicans fan since the beginning of his career. I've really been paying attention the past maybe 3-4 seasons, so most of it, but even then, not super paying attention till last year. And I'm not... I mean, I wasn't necessarily incredibly impressed every single night before this season, especially last year. There were nights where I was, like, downright disappointed in him last year, like, knowing he could have done more for sure. And this year, it hasn't even been close. I mean, I definitely think out of any player that I've watched consistently, you know, nightly, that I've, you know, ever been a fan of a team or covered a team, anything like that, he's quickly becoming the top of that list for me as far as being just straight up impressing. Like, I think it really is that floater that being comfortable making and taking that shot has opened up so much, because now he knows if he gets in a rough situation in the paint, he can dribble through guys and then just rise up for that shot. And he makes it most of the time. So if he has that, then that opens up, you know, teams are more afraid to give him space when he's going to shoot a jumper. Teams are, bodying up on him more and letting him, you know, use the quickness he's always had to get around them when they do try to play closer to him and contest those shots. And it's that in-between that makes it so much easier to do all the other stuff. He can dunk on anybody if he gets in the paint, but he's always had a jumper, but being able to do all of it consistently and then adding that floater. I mean, this is my long way of saying I agree with you. It's definitely Ben Davis.
And it's almost like, because he was already really good. And like you said, last year, at this, he would have games where you're disappointed. And I'm almost waiting for that this season. I'm almost waiting for the game where I'm like, okay, well, now he's coming back to earth.
Well, I think that Sixers game, I mean, I don't know if you watched that one because it was pretty disappointing. If you weren't watching it on the night of, you probably weren't going to go back to it. But he was pretty bad that night. But I just feel like there's going to be, just like entire teams have, you know, schedule losses, whatever you want to call them, rough patches. It's 82 games. You're not going to be perfect for all of them. Even an MVP isn't going to do that. I mean, he's still averaging crazy numbers across the board. But I was disappointed that night. But still, like, you end up taking those bad performances a lot easier once a guy is consistently showing you greatness. And, I mean, there's really nothing else to call this season for him.
Oh, yeah, and I think, and I don't know if you would agree, but if the Pelicans are anywhere near, like, the playoffs, he's definitely at top of MVP list. If he's if the Pelicans are like four seed anywhere near in that range, I think he's at top of people's MVP list.
I mean, I agree with you, but that's a really long way to go.
And it is. It's just kind of a testament to like how good he's been and like the drop off.
Yeah, for sure. What do you see in his defense overall? I mean, that's what I've been most interested in this year is, besides the blocks have always been there. What do you think overall of how he's been defensively?
Well, I've been, for a big man, to like the way he plays the passing lane is really, really great, amazing to me. He has really good anticipation on timing on what guys are trying to do. He jumps passes really well. And I think he's finding like accepted the anchor of the front line. I think playing center has like a big reason to do that. His willingness to play center because he wasn't willing to do that in the past. I think that's helped him. And I think mostly I've kind of had some disappointments in that he kind of gets blown by a little bit too easy. He comes out on the perimeter too much. But I mean that's very minuscule. I've honestly really been. Feel like he finally took that next step to being the defensive anchor that we thought he could be. He's not there yet. He's not like all-time great level yet by any means, but I finally think you're starting to see the signs that the defensive potential that we thought he would have, and he's finally starting to like showcase that this year. What do you think?
I mean, I definitely agree with you. I think that I attach too much to how he's doing individually on defense because I want to see so much out of him. I think he's definitely falling into that category that it's easy to put players in that are so great is you constantly want them to keep building and keep building. And, you know, why doesn't this guy shoot threes better? Why doesn't this guy play, you know, defend the pick and roll better? And I think that, I mean, the pick and roll has definitely been, besides when he's, you know, laying back and blocking some dumb guard who tries to throw a floater over him, that kind of stuff's always been impressive. But I mean, I really have to tell myself some nights to just be like, all right, get over whatever you think he should be doing and just let what he is doing like happen to you. And he's definitely been impressive when I've tried to do that. I mean, he just quickly through the numbers, he's been the Pelicans have been 7.2 points per 100 possessions better with him on the court. And overall, they're a number 12 in defense this year so far. I mean, after last night, that was a nice performance. I'm sure that boosted their numbers overall, holding the Pacers to 25 on a pretty or 95 points on a pretty inefficient night for them. That's obviously nights like that are going to help, but still, I mean, that's impressive to keep the team that high on the list and also to have the team be even better with you when you're playing 38 minutes a game. I mean, it's hard to argue when you see numbers like that. But no, I think the steals, I am glad you touched on that because that's definitely been a big part of it for me is those paths. I mean, he, for a superstar, quote unquote, whatever you want to call those kinds of players, top 25 players, top 30 players, for the best player on each team to be hustling, if every superstar hustled the way Anthony Davis has been doing in this season, teams would be a lot better. He gets on the floor after loose balls. He's bodying up on guys. I mean, his rebounding's been a lot better this year, watching it, but also just the number. I mean, he's averaging the most of his career. All that stuff has been – he's just doing better at a lot of the things he's always been good at, and sometimes it's that easy, I guess.
Yeah, and then obviously, like, his usage is, like, crazy this year too, I believe. So, like, that's probably played, like, a part in the jump in numbers like he's always been capable. And when the rebounding, I don't even know if he's necessarily like rebounding better. It's just that he's playing less with the Sieg. He's playing more at center. He's playing with Solomon Hill a lot at the four or Terrence Jones, who are not really like great rebounders.
Tim Jones had a nice rebounding night last night. He was getting pissed at guys at the end of the game. I don't know what got into him, but he's like, if my rebounding is going to decide this game, then we're going to win this game.
It was probably one of my. Yesterday was probably one of the best games I saw from Terrence Jones, like, all around. Like, obviously he has those, like, rare scoring outbursts, but as far as, like, a complete performance defensively, on the glass, on offense, like, he wasn't stopping the ball. All his shots were in rhythm, and I think they got him, like, an isolation. I think you tweeted it out. He, it was he was isolation, able to get to the basket, and I like the way they were using him last night.
Yeah, what that tweet was that they're putting him on the at the elbow or in the post on ISOs rather than having him stick around in the like top of the key mid range area, because that's when he stops the ball. He doesn't know what to do in those situations, which sure, that's maybe not his best spot. So it's good that they're learning not to put him there. But in the beginning of the year, especially when there wasn't as much around him, they were just throwing in the ball and asking him to create. And that's never been what his game is. So yeah, having using his passing ability, I mean, he's not like a ball handler, but he can find guys. And so to put him in the post and have movement going around him, some of the, you know, off screens and stuff we talked about earlier, for shooters on the bench, Galloway and whoever else, that's going to be, I think that's a great way to use him. And it worked last night, so I think we'll see more of it.
And there was like the end of the second, end of the first half, there was him and Solomon Hill at the front court, and I thought it was going to be a disaster. But I think they went on like a little mini run, got the Pelicans right back into it at half. They were down eight.
Yeah, that was because Davis got his third foul, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was – I mean, that game last night was really impressive overall. I mean, it's kind of hard to be, like, excited after a game against the Pacers. But that's a legit team. They're not horrible. They're not bad. They're, you know, mid-tier playoff team in the East. Those are the kinds of teams you have to be impressive against and then try your best against the top-notch teams.
And even against Golden State, they were, like, legitimately, like, impressive to watch.
They always play up to Golden State. I mean, I don't even know. I don't know if it's the coaching staff having familiarity with those guys. But I mean, even this year, that's a completely different team. They're doing things differently with Durant, and they're still every game that they've played against them. I mean, Curry breaking a record a couple weeks ago. If he hadn't been that hot from three, they would have been just as much in that game as they were the other two. I don't know what it is about that matchup. Maybe they just get fired up from their history with those guys, but.
Against Phoenix, you know, it wasn't obviously like they got a win, but it wasn't like as impressive as the last two games. Like they won two out of their last three, and they look legitimately better. But we've seen like this team can go on stretches of looking really good and then just completely like flatline and revert back to stagnant ball movement. And I don't know if that happened. That happens to like every team. You know, every team goes through stretches, but it just seems like with the Pelicans. Like consistency has remaining consistent, having a consistent style of play has not been the case for them.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we can wrap up with some stuff for the next couple nights, but the last little, you know, third season award that we had was a least valuable player, and that's not the best one to end on. I guess I should have planned that better. That's a little depressing, but obviously last night was good, and you're right, we have seen stretches. But there's no getting around the fact that this team has not been very good for most of the year. They're 9-18, 12th in the West. They've got a lot of ground to make up in the playoff hunt. I mean, it even kind of sounds silly to be talking about any of that stuff right now, playoffs, unless things turn up quickly. But that being said, there has to be one guy you've looked at or seen consistent disappointment out of that you think is maybe most responsible for. I mean, to me, it's been the lack of ability to close out games. So that's where my answer is going to go. But I mean, who do you have?
Well, for individual player, I don't want to like pencil him as like the reason that the team is 9-18. But like, it just least valuable player for me is Solomon Hill, just because of the 4-year, $48 million contract. He's taking 12% of the cap space up, and that you signed him to be your small forward for the future. This is the guy you pegged long-term to pair with Anthony Davis at the three or the four. And he just, frankly, like, you could find, like, the production that he's giving you on a lot of guys for, like, a lot cheaper. And it's not necessarily even the money. It's just the amount of years that you tied into him. And he's not really you can't see any consistent offensive game. I don't know if he'll ever develop that. He's already 24, 20 going on. Or maybe he's a 25, I don't know. But it's just – he doesn't seem like one of those guys that's like for sure you can say, yeah, he's going to get better. I can trust him. Or he's someone that we can put in as a starter 30 minutes a game. And that, like, that's what his contract is saying. And I think, like, come down the line, like you said, it hasn't really been getting scrutinized much. But I think when you look back on it, this might be one of the worst deals of the offseason.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely hard to disagree.
And I don't want to blame it like, oh, he's the reason the team's 9-18, because there's a lot of different reasons.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I framed it that way, but I know. I mean, everyone knows it's not Solomon Hill's fault the team lost 18 games. I mean, he's been decent for probably half those games. He's not the kind of player that's going to impact positively or negatively that kind of result.
And it's not even like a knock on him for getting his contract. Like, he got paid. He can't really knock him for it. And just that you wonder if there's just much better options or other options that you could have had that would have given you the same production. Like I said, I don't even know if he's better than Dante Cunningham. I can't for sure say that Solomon Hill is better than Dante Cunningham, or even when we had a guy like James Ennis last year, I can't say that he's better than James Ennis, because I don't know. I don't think he is, but he's making like double or maybe triple of those guys make.
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't shown it for sure. I mean, I've liked what they've been doing with him. I mean, that's the main reason I have more optimism about this team recently than I had. I mean, even during that 5-game streak, it was like, or four, whatever it was, when Drew first came back, it's like there's going to be that bounce back regression, positive regression back to what the team should have been, just by way of having Holiday on the court. I mean, you could have seen that coming. I don't think necessarily I expected it to be all those games right at once to get us back to, you know, where we should be, but it's still expected. And so I wasn't necessarily that ecstatic about it when it was happening. The Hawks win, that one was really impressive, but the rest of them, I was kind of just in almost not expecting, but, you know, and this stretch, even though it hasn't been as, you know, exclamatory in the win column, has definitely been impressive to me because I'm seeing things out of the individual players that I wish I had been seeing all year. And that obviously is more indicative of, you know, how they might be able to play in the future than, you know, Drew Holiday showing off his skills over his few game stretch. So in that regard, I think Etuan Moore has been the least valuable, or, you know, least most disappointing, whatever you want to call it, player for me, because even though he played crunch time last night, which has not been all that common for him. Gentry hasn't trusted him in those situations all that often. There's been a few games here and there. I think in the Sixers game, he played crunch time, which is not necessarily good on him. They lost that lead in the fourth quarter, and they shouldn't have. And Stauskas scored a bunch of points in the second half. But it's been more because, I mean, even last night, he had a nice steal on Paul George. He's defended decently all year. I mean, he hasn't always gotten those top-notch assignments that you might think of him as being able to handle. But when he's had the opportunity, he's made some big, you know, plays. He's never looked to be the problem on defense, that's for sure. And yet he's still not, you know, to have somebody defending average or above average and still look awful, that means their offense must be atrocious. And, I mean, the points are coming, and, I mean, he's scoring in double digits, but he's shooting 31% on threes. He's not being trusted to handle the ball, and maybe that's, you know, not on him necessarily to not be put in the positions to succeed. Some of that's obviously coaching, but he's just been disappointing, and he's not been able to do the things that you would have been sure he would have been able to do. I think that's what's been the worst part. Is there's some, like, each one more, I'm like, okay, well, he'll be able to play the pick and roll on offense, probably make some pull-up jumpers, and then defend. And, I mean, he's defended decently, but the offense is nowhere near. He's even worse than he was last year in a similar role. And it so
looks like he kind of doesn't fit in on offense. Like,
yeah, I mean, I saw that you were saying that in the grades, and I kind of agree, but I feel like he should.
Yeah, he should definitely. I wish he was better off ball. He's not as good off ball as I thought he would be. I thought he'd be a lot better on, obviously, like catch and shoot or pull up jumpers. But he's gotten like a lot of, takes a lot of dribbles. He kind of like, he's kind of in a box, the ball stopper. He gets into the post. He does a little turnaround. And
yeah, he's like the fifth guy on this team that's best suited for a backup point guard role.
Yeah, and he's not really producing, so it's hard to put him as the primary ball handler when you have guys like Tim Frazier or Tyreek Evans that are, and then you have Langston Galloway, who's just like surprisingly just on fire all of a sudden off, and he can Langston Galloway is like the perfect guy to play off ball. He can catch and shoot, he's knocking down threes, and it's just hard to see where like Moore fits in and if he's like the guy that should be handling the ball or creating out of the pick and roll. I don't know. It's been shocking because I thought he would be for sure like a great, I thought he was gonna be a good acquisition. He looked good in like the off season, and it just hasn't clicked.
Yeah, for sure. I was more excited about that deal than the Hill contract, regardless of money. I just like how I thought Moore would fit on the team a lot more than how I thought Hill would at face value, but obviously that hasn't been. Neither one of them have been great, but I think Hill's been at least a better fit. But I think we can end.
A bad omen, though, that our two lead valuable players were the two big free agent signings.
Right, yeah. I think that says all you need to know about how the Pelicans have looked through a third of the year. That in itself. Yeah. But I think we'll end. We won't do Friday or Sunday's games because I'm not sure if this will run Sunday or Monday, but we can project the wins for next week's games. They only play three next week, which is going to be a nice break for them. They do have a back-to-back on Tuesday and Wednesday at Philly and then in OKC, which is going to be a crappy way to go see Russ, but I guess that's how it goes. So the first game is, like I said, Tuesday at Philly. I think that's a winnable game, but I also thought the last Sixers game was going to be winnable. What do you think?
I think they win that game. I feel like against the Philly, it was a lot of fluky stuff. I don't think Drew played either.
No, he didn't.
Yeah, good health. I think they should handle Philly.
And Embiid will play in that one too. I'm sure, pretty sure, because it's not a back-to-back or anything for them, so it'll be with him again. But I still agree with you. I think they'll win that one. So then the next night they fly to, or that night they fly to OKC, and they play the Thunder on Wednesday night. I'm misreading. It's a home game against the Thunder. So they fly back to New Orleans that night. And even further travel, but obviously better to play the Thunder at home. What do you think?
That's tough because they've actually been pretty good at home. But
yeah, and they were competitive with the Thunder for the most part the other night.
That's tough. I'm gonna say they lose though. I don't think they can. I think the back to back his entire way because I don't think they have enough shooting.
Yeah, and I don't think Russ is a good matchup for Holiday. It's not the kind of guy that he's. I mean, he's not a good matchup for anybody in the league. But I think you have to piss Russ off and at least play as physically as he does, and that's not Holiday's game. He's not a loud guy. He's not going to tackle you to the ground kind of guy. So I agree with you there. And then Friday, I think we'll both agree, is home again with, you know, a whole day's rest, probably an off day Thursday, back home again on Friday before Christmas, last game before Christmas, and it's the Heat. What do you think?
I give that a win. They should beat the Heat at home.
Yeah, they better beat the Heat. I mean, Dragic is the kind of guy that that Holiday can defend, not too athletic, and their offense is going to be dependent. If Dragic has a huge game, then he might have a chance to win. Otherwise, they're probably going to lose. So if Holiday can even, you know, keep him in check a little bit, then I think that one's a pretty easy matchup for the Pelicans. That's like one of the only teams in the league that has a worse rotation than the Pelicans do. So I think you're right. I think we agree on all those. So 2-1, I mean, if that is true, then they'll have won. It'll be 4-6 going into a pretty crappy next week, which is going to be Mavs, Clippers, Knicks, Cavs. But still, I mean,
one win out of those, yeah.
You win the games that you're supposed to win, and then you try your best in the other ones, and they haven't even been able to do that. So if they can start playing those games a lot better, that'll give them a better chance.
And they'll be like 11-19 if they do go 2-1, obviously. But And it really is just about, like, the 0-8. Going to 0-8, like, really just puts you completely behind the 8-ball to where you can't even afford, like, those little stretches they had, like, last week where you lose, like, 3 in a row. They can't afford that at this point if they have any hope of making the playoffs, which, like, that shouldn't even be, like, even talked about right now, but, you know.
Yeah. All right, well, I mean, 2-1's a good way to leave, so I guess we got off the least valuable player stuff in a good way, but I think that'll wrap up this episode, and we are going to try to do more of these as our schedules get freed up. I think maybe I'll try to – I have a Timberwolves writer from FanSided who I'm going to try to get on the next one. So if you're listening and you'd like to hear that, obviously be on the lookout on Twitter. We are at Pelican Debrief, and Charles, you can catch him. You can plug your own Twitter there, Charles.
All right. Follow me at C. LaRocca Jr. Follow Pelican Debrief. And
check out Charles. He does a player of the week every week on Pelican Debrief. Usually runs Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, somewhere in there. So be on the lookout for all that. And the next podcast will probably be up next week. And we appreciate your listening and reading as always. And try to go to some Pelicans games if you live in New Orleans, because you're going to be one of like 55 people that are there. Might be a fun game. So save the attendance, please. Always wondering if she's all into me. Curly hair like a fantasy, I can't believe. She quiet, but the only ass to intrigue. And she's the kind of girl that you're bringing home. That booty looking so nice like provolone.